All right. So good to be with you today, Sam. We've invited here in the spirit of building leftist unity, strength, and power. In that spirit, thanks for joining me. Really looking forward to getting to know you, sharing your story, maybe some life tips. And of course, we've got the leftist inquisition down the road as well. Everyone loves that. You ready to go?
I am ready to go. Thrilled to be here, Dan. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, if you don't mind introducing yourself, let us know your name, your pronouns, and where people can find you on the World Wide Web.
Sure. My name is Sam Sachs. He, him. I guess people can mostly find me posting on Twitter at Sam Sachs. But when I'm not online, I am hosting a podcast. I don't know. If you're doing a podcast, are you permanently online? Does that count as offline work if you do a podcast? I think it does.
It gives you cover. Like, you don't have to necessarily be entirely online if you're a podcast person. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gives you a little cover.
So yeah, I've got a weekly podcast called District Sentinel Radio. You can catch that on all the podcasting platforms. We've also got a Patreon for our show that comes out weekly. But I guess primarily also I'm on Means TV. I started a show on the streaming platform Means TV. It's an anti-capitalist streaming platform that debuted about a year ago now, a little over a year now. And I host a weekly morning news show called Means Morning News. It airs every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. And I think we're going to be rolling out a second edition a week, too, pretty soon as well. But for now, Thursday mornings, 9 a.m. at Means TV. It's got kind of the aesthetics and feel of a sort of retro cable news show. But it's all devoted to anti-capitalist news. We focus on labor organizing, climate change, abolishing the police. We've got a bunch of fun segments as well. A good graphics team, music team behind everything. It's a neat little thing that I'm proud of that we're doing.
Sam, the production's incredible. It's obviously one of the first things that would like catch someone like me, like my eye. I'm like, What a thing. It just is so beautiful. And I got to say, I'm sorry that Sam never returned from getting cigarettes. Never came back.
Well, Sam and I still do the podcast. Okay. Sam Knight is like, at his heart, he is a print journalist.
Okay.
And he's been doing a lot of print stuff over at Truth Out and some various other outlets. And he just wants to be on Means TV on his own terms. So he's been on once. He was co-hosting. He's since left co-hosting. He came on as a correspondent, and he's going to be making frequent appearances as a correspondent. We're actually trying to expand the whole team at Means Morning News and bring on more correspondents. We had labor reporter Kim Kelly on the show a few weeks ago, reporting from the Alabama miners' strike at Warrior Met Coal, and we've had Ted Kelly on the show. They are out of Philly, reporting on the plight of political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. And we've got some other correspondents that are working on stuff that we hope to be debuting in the coming weeks on the show.
You had Christian Small sitting on right in front of a new Amazon building, huh? That was great. I love that one.
That's right. Christian was there disrupting stuff. For people who don't know, Christian was fired from Amazon last year for trying to organize his coworkers at JFK 8. It's a Staten Island warehouse. He was basically trying to – he's not a labor organizer. It wasn't at the time. Just a worker at Amazon recognizing that the conditions during the pandemic were extremely unsafe, tried to organize his coworkers around that and was fired. After he was fired, the executives at Amazon were talking shit about him in closed-door meetings. And now here he is camped out that same facility. I think he gets there at like 4 a.m. every morning, and he's there till late at night covering every shift, working with some other people with their group, the Congress of Essential Workers, just doing some shit-kicking up there, more power to him.
Awesome. Okay, let's keep going here. All right, Sam, your hobbies. Like, what do you do? What keeps you busy when you're not busy with a show and all the journalism you're doing over there.
Dan, are you from Wisconsin?
I'm a Chicago guy.
Oh, Chicago guy.
Yeah, right. I got Malord in the freezer and everything.
Oh, gotcha. I was trying to pick up on that accent. It's a good one. Let's see. What do I do? I game, I guess, a lot of the time. On my these days with the pandemic going on, there's I guess not much. Actually, I say that, but my lifestyle hasn't changed too much. I suppose it's not like I don't go out to bars or I'm not much of a big concert goer or anything like that. But big time homebody. So yeah, I'll mostly game. I stick with kind of like city building. Strategy games pretty often. I like Cities Skylines, Surviving Mars, Civilization, obviously. So yeah, and there's all those games you can play and they'll just suck hours and hours and hours away from you. I've also really gotten into Kerbal Space Program, which is like it's like Flight Simulator but for space and a bit more silly because you're playing with these little Kerbal aliens. But you can just build a space program and build rockets, and it's got a really incredible physics engine in it that you really feel like you're learning how to do space travel in it. And, learned a lot from that game. So I've sunk a lot of hours into that, but, reading Netflix, that sort of stuff. Nothing too out of the ordinary. I have gotten back into sculpting. When I was a bit younger, I was really into it and then just kind of abandoned it for a while, but got some Sculpey a few months ago and starting to just like form some little figurines and stuff with the Sculpey. So find ways to keep myself entertained.
Hey, my friend Dick Warlock from the Left Flank Facts is into sculpting too. You should see his work.
Oh yeah. I'd like to.
That's sort of a joke. I was really hoping you were in on the joke. Okay, so
I think we're MUFOs, Dick and I. Yeah. But I'm not sure.
He's got this obsession with Jar Jar Binks, a photo of Jar Jar Binks that's just very explicit. Let's just put it that way. And then he sculpted it. All right. So Sam, this is a blast. I'm having fun here. What I'd love to ask about is your leftward bound journey. So a little chat about, you know, how you came to leftism or left adjacentism. You know, you describe it as, you know, as what it is. I don't have like your tagline. Does it say anything about like leftism or Marxism? I know that's the case for like the Left Trigger show. They call it the best Marxist video game show. Does your show self-identify?
Means Morning News is your source for post-capitalist news. Okay. And District Sentinel Radio is in DC, so you don't have to be, which isn't explicitly leftist or Marxist or anything, but.
Okay. Very well. So, okay. Yeah, please. Yeah. Let's just start there. See where it goes.
I was raised mostly in a kind of liberal family. And you know, as a kid, we really don't have politics other than what our parents give us. But once I started, I forgot who, but sometime around high school, like I was like handed some crime think literature. I feel like every leftist to a certain extent was exposed to that stuff in high school and like goes through this phase of like, you know, kill your masters, embrace anarchism. And those books did have an effect on me as a kid in sort of just re-scrambling my brain and how to sort of approach the world and the way the world works. When I got into college, I got really into philosophy. And I ended up getting a degree in philosophy. And that's where I discovered Marx and got into political philosophy. But I really, you know, was for much of my time in college into more like metaphysics and existentialism and reading a lot of that stuff and got into Sartre, who was a leftist, and got into some of his political theory in addition to Marx and more traditional, I guess, socialist theory. But I'd say that like I became less of an anarchist and more of a communist in college. And still, when I graduated, like I was working at a organic grocery store co-op, working as in the produce department. And it was a really chill job. Like you were paid living wages, and you just got to like cut fruit all day and talk to like people in the city and smoke weed in the cooler and stuff. But I was like, shit, I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, and I just didn't want to be there anymore. I wanted to like move to a big city and try and get, I was like young and idealistic and felt like let's make some change. Let's shake some stuff up. And I moved to DC, and it was the same time as like Obama was running for president. And I was like, huh, well maybe there is like something happening with this sort of kind of inside game route. So I got a job working on the Hill worked on the Hill, and immediately after, like, well, not immediately, but came to realize that like this is all sort of a game. And
do you mean the Hill magazine, the publication?
No, I meant like working for a member of Congress. Sorry, I meant working. I worked for a Democratic member of Congress, and not a really particularly progressive member of Congress. He was a centrist member of a Congress, and it was my first job, like, other than out of college, other than working at the grocery store that I worked at throughout college. And I wanted to work in DC. And so I went to the member of Congress who represented the area that I was living in Florida, thinking that I might have an in. And sure enough, I did, and ended up getting hired just as like a staff assistant answering phone calls, but eventually like became a legislative assistant where I was actually, you know, providing advice to the member. And among my portfolio items at the time, and this was in 2009, 2010, so the first 2 years of the Obama administration. And I had like the Disclose Act, which was legislation to overturn Citizens United. It would require revealing donors to super PACs. I had some election reform bills, and I just like, it was pretty clear that no matter what advice I would give the member, it didn't matter. That, and I had it explicitly told to me, in fact, that like, you know, this is an issue that the Chamber of Commerce is key voting, which means that like they're paying attention to this vote. And depending on how you vote, it will go into the Chamber of Commerce's rating of you. And the Chamber of Commerce is an extremely powerful lobby, you know, pretty much runs all local towns in this country. The local chamber does. So, I pretty quickly realized that working on the Hill wasn't for me. So, and it also radicalized me further. So like I played the game that like, you know, maybe you can work sort of within the Democratic Party. Maybe we can, if we can get a bunch of communists working on Capitol Hill, maybe we can do something here. But like once you work there for a year or so, you quickly realize how silly that sounds. And not too long after that, I was working at RT, which is like a Russian media outlet, which is probably the opposite of working on Capitol Hill. I found myself working like at an outlet where I'm suddenly being registered as a foreign agent, like an enemy of the state to a certain extent. But I really enjoyed working there for a while. There was a bunch of like-minded socialists working there, anti-capitalists. I sort of use, you'll notice I personally consider myself a communist. I think that the distinction right now between communists and socialists is like, it's important for, you know, fun theoretical debate, but when we're engaging in banter in a capitalist society, I don't see much of the point in like constantly interchanging. So for the most part, we'll say anti-capitalists, because I feel like anarchists as well are my ideological allies in this current state. So, but anyways, there was a bunch of leftist anti-capitalists working at RT because there's nowhere else to go. This was back in 2011. 2012, you know, you've got the Occupy Wall Street movement picking up. You've got sort of the backlash, the leftist backlash against the Obama administration once it was realized that everybody was kind of duped by that. And there weren't really many journalistic outlets to get that stuff out there. This was before Patreon. This was before everybody, this was before streaming and Twitch. Yeah. If you wanted to find coverage of this stuff, you had to rely on like Huffington Post and Slate and kind of traditional liberal media outlets or MSNBC. I mean, so it was definitely like, it was an exciting place to work, in a place where you felt like you could be authentic to yourself in the stories you want to cover. And during Occupy especially, I think RT, they won an international Emmy for their coverage of Occupy.
Wow.
And yeah, that helped me grow ideologically too, working there. And I was also working for a guy named Tom Hartman, who he's a progressive talk show host, like one of the top radio talk show hosts on the left. This is an industry normally dominated by conservatives, so there's not many people on the left in talk radio. He's one of them, still is. You can check out his show. He used to have Bernie on his show every Friday, Brunch with Bernie. This was, again, you know, this was before anybody knew who Bernie was. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to work on Tom's show and grew a lot working for Tom. I mean, my politics since then has probably gotten more radical, but he had a very influential impact on, you know, cutting through. You know, while I had the sort of the theory and knowledge, Tom helped like show how capital is exerting an influence every day in the news items that we go through, and that also helped me. And I don't know, ever since then I've been doing my own thing, and that's gotten to the podcast that I talked about earlier, Means TV, and the conditions on the ground have rapidly deteriorated, proving right a lot of assumptions I had along this journey, and not just me, but all of us in this sort of movement. So yeah, I'd say that's kind of how I've gotten to where I'm at. I mean, there've also been just kind of personal experiences with the healthcare system and family that okay. I'm sure everybody is sort of, you know, along this journey, if you haven't dealt with like how terrible the U.S. healthcare system is, or how actually the U.S. welfare system is garbage, and the idea that people can just easily get on welfare or have access to the social safety net that they need. It's not true. It's extremely difficult. And once you encounter these things one time, you realize, I think it flicks a switch in your brain, that a lot of what you're being told is bullshit, and that we live in a society that is extremely cruel, and we should dedicate ourselves to fixing that.
So you were convinced that the inside route was fruitless. It's not worth the time. Fair to say electoralism is, you weren't convinced that that's our pathway.
I would say that I've probably moderated my views on that since then. I mean, when I first crashed out of the hill, yeah. And I do think, like, do I think that the Democratic Party is going to bring about the end of capitalism and establish a workers' state? I don't think that. Do I think that the Democratic Party can be pressured both by the deteriorating material conditions on the ground and through organizing on the left to put pressure on them? Can the party be pressured to institute social democratic reforms that, while preserving structure of capitalism, will still improve the lives of tens of millions of people? I do think that that's possible. I don't think we have much proof in that that's being effective just yet. And so I can understand, I mean, we do have Biden proposing trillions of dollars in new proposals. And I think there is a discussion to be had on why that is and where that pressure is coming from. So having said that, I'm not going to discourage people from getting involved in electoralism in this project to move the Democratic Party, to force the Democratic Party to help millions of people who need help. I was a supporter of the Bernie Sanders Electoral Project campaign. I was a big time supporter of it. I don't think it's entirely fruitless at all, but I think fundamentally we need to be building alternate structures, both in the media. And that's why I'm really happy to be working with Means TV, because I think that that is an example, and there are lots of other examples of it as well, from, you know, Jacobin to whatever, of leftist institutions building their own stuff that's not reliant on capitalists, and eventually organizing back, you know, getting supporting organizers in workplaces and trying to get union density up in the U.S. I was on a stream earlier today and talked about some of this stuff. Like, we need to organize, need to get workers organized and get union density in the U.S. up again. Like, to me, that's a far more important project than trying to run electoral campaigns to get Democrats that we like more elected. But they do connect. I mean, we need to pass the PRO Act to make it easier to organize. So all these things feed into each other. So I don't see it so much in black and white, but I do prefer the idea of working toward building a workers' party that can both, you know, seize control of ballot lines and run for office on its own terms, as well as, like, not engage at all in this sort of bourgeois democracy and start building, like, alternate power structures to help organize society.
Okay. So maybe electoralism isn't the pathway to revolution, but there's still harm reduction.
I don't really buy into the argument that, like, that if you embrace too much electoralism, you're harming the other side, as long as you, like, are actively trying to build some other alternate party. Because, like, I mean, you could say the same thing about, like, Medicare for all. Like, why are we fighting for Medicare for all if we can't just overthrow all of capitalism as well? And it's like, well, the reason why is because we can save lives of millions of people. You could make the argument that we implement Medicare for all and suddenly you have not quite as revolutionary a population because now they have health care, and that helps perpetuate capitalism. And I don't think it's a helpful argument for our times right now, as people are dying and getting crushed.
All right, Sam. So what I'd love to do is actually just make sure we've exhausted this category right here. Sort of the heart of it's the meat of the, I don't know. It's the heart is the meat. It's something. Any other aspects of politics? We've mentioned a lot so far. Just want to make sure anything, like, maybe that convinced you intellectually, and it maybe can come from all of these connecting dots that we just connected there. What else or what else can we put our thumb on specifically that maybe helped to pull your heart and mind to the left? Anything else?
I guess, you know, also just, like, groups of friends too. I mean, that always helps, like, surrounding yourself. You know, there's like common refrain of, like, oh, you surround yourself with people who don't think like you and you can learn new perspectives. And yeah, sure. But also, like, you know, surrounding yourself with other communists helps you have more confidence in your own belief system, and also helps you challenge your belief system if, like, you start turning into a squish, you know. But I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, any other specific, like, life moments, but no, I think I've pretty much covered it all, Dan.
Quite exhaustive. So just making sure.
My mouth is dry from talking so goddamn much here, and now you're trying to pull even more out of here.
Cheers to you.
Cheers.
All right, Sam. So now that's perfect. That means we get to move on to the next portion. Hashtag be best, Sam.
Be best.
Yeah. If you had the chance maybe to go back in time, speak to a younger version of yourself, that's not possible. Time travel's not real. But, you know, that's sort of the idea of this question.
It's not real. Is that still out? Like, what's the deal? Is this something that, like, is forever, just will never happen? Or is it one of those things where, like, the science is still out, maybe it can happen? What is it?
Let's be honest. If they fucking figured it out, they wouldn't have told us.
I guess, yeah, if they had figured it out, we probably would have had people who've traveled back in time around. Have you've seen those pictures, though, of people who are, like, mysteriously looking futuristic outfits in old photos?
Yeah.
So how do you explain that?
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So, but for the sake of argument, let's assume that I can't go back in time. All right.
So the idea is, like, we're thinking of someone more generically, someone watching the replay, someone in chat. What could you do if you could distill your life into, some shortcuts, be it general life tips or something having to do with your leftward bound journey? What might you be able to share wisdom wise, Sam Sachs?
I would tell my younger self and all younger people, but maybe they already know this and it will show how old and out of touch I am, is to learn to code. Like, honestly, I feel there's like so many times that, and I'm in my mid 30s. This wasn't exactly, I didn't perceive when I was young how important it and useful it'd be to be able to have these skills. And I find myself like constantly needing to pay other people or reach out for help on how to do some like basic things. I mean, my fucking website's down right now. In fact, the District Sentinel website is down as we speak right now, because I have to like update some stuff with WordPress. My like theme is out of date. Yeah, so I need to. Yeah, it's always something that, like, I'm sure fucking Zoomers nowadays can do in, like, 5 minutes, and it's, like, not a big deal. But, yeah, there are just some basic tools about coping with our modern age now that I didn't bother to learn, that I would tell people to learn. Not to sound like kind of a dipshit, like, CNBC guy, but learn to code, kids. For sure. Learn to code. Also read more. I tell kids to read more. Just, you don't, have as much time when you get older to read more. And I feel like I also don't have the retention that I had when I was a kid to read. In college. Yeah. I feel like some of it was wasted. But I had a lot of fun, too, in college, so maybe it's not all regrets.
Good times, good times. I thought you were trolling me with a learn to code. I'm like, what is this motherfucker?
I mean, you know how to do this shit.
I don't. None of this is coding. Like, what I do is, like, actually, the thing that's sort of evolving is, like, coding for people who don't know how to code. Like, that's sort of, like, what coders are realizing. All right, how do we bridge the gap between me and the layman's like Dan? So, I sort of do things. I use a thing called Touch Portal. It's sort of like coding, but none of it's actual coding. It's like, very light programming. Yeah, it's like it's like scripting for people who don't know how to script.
Yeah, it's like just moving blocks around on the stuff.
Yeah,
cutting out. Yeah, I can do that stuff, sort of.
Yeah, then you could be a live streamer just like me. When you grow up, Sam.
Oh yeah, upgrading a podcaster to live streamer. That's it. What's after? What's the next one?
Homeless. you don't realize that you're going down. All right, Sam. So now we get into the leftist Inquisition. This is the questionnaire. Everyone loves it. No one hates it. And for any reason, you're encouraged to skip or pass any question.
This is the part where I didn't prepare for it here. All right.
Just skip. If you can't think of anything, just skip. Okay. Or just say something funny. I don't. It doesn't matter.
It's all good. Are we moving through this too fast? Am I giving answers too fast here?
Here's the thing. I think we're actually making really good time. I like the time that we're making right now. Usually, each interview is about an hour. You know, it's just arbitrary. I picked that time, but this means we actually have some time at the end to sort of ask you what's grinding your gears. What's taking up space in your mind rent free, as they say. All right. So here's the questionnaire. And if you want, you could take your time here. I don't care. We're just gonna have some fun. Sam, do you have a favorite word?
Favorite word? Shit. Let's pass. Let's go back. Can I pass and go back to these? I'll think about it a little bit. I feel like I'm going to play this like Family Feud, like the thing on Family Feud. What's the last stage called?
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean.
Fire something.
Yeah, the quick fire round. Okay, I'm not sure what they call. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've always wanted to be on the show. They never invited me.
I feel like as I'm giving other answers to questions, I'll say a word and I'll be like, I like that word. Let's use that word.
Let's keep that in our pocket.
Yeah.
Do you have a least favorite word?
No, we'll do the same thing. We'll do the same thing with that.
All right. Do you have a favorite drug, a vice, or guilty pleasure? Sam, you can also name one of each if you like.
Sure. I like marijuana. I'd say that's my favorite drug. Yeah. I've been smoking it for like 20 years now.
Nice.
I've gotten into doing dabs too. So I'm like, you know, moving up a bit.
Yeah. Do you have like a dab rig or I recently got one of these, what is this called?
Those pens?
Yeah, it's like a little dab pen, dude.
Yeah, it's that thing. So what do you load it with, like actual dab materials, or is it like a? All right.
You just stick it in their little chamber. It's got a little scooper guy, and you scoop it up, and you just, dude, all day, baby. I can't remember what this one's called for some reason.
I splurged kind of big, and I got a Dr. Dabber switch, which is like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I was looking at that one.
Maybe you can bring it up for the audience, but it's like a pretty big device. I came across it. My girlfriend actually discovered it because we got into this routine. There it is. There's the Dr. Dabber switch. Yeah, people can now call me bougie now that they see the fucking price.
A little
of
bougie. Thing.
But honestly, it like pays for itself eventually. Mm-hmm. So there's this guy called the Senior Stoner on YouTube. He's got a YouTube channel and he's literally like a stoner senior citizen, and he does the dab of the day every single day, and he does like this sort of, he'll write like he does like some sort of like motivational talk before he does his dab of the day, and the funny thing about it is you could tell he writes it out beforehand. But he writes it out on like his notes app, and then he prints out his notes app and reads it before the dab of the day. But in addition to doing his dab of the day, he also does reviews. He does product reviews of various rigs, and he has them all. I don't know if people send them to him or if he's just like rolling hard and just buys every fucking electric dab rig he can possibly get. So discovered the Dr. Dabber switch through the Senior Stoner's YouTube channel. So let me plug the Senior Stoner there. Check it out. I think last time, I haven't watched him in a few months actually. And last time I watched him, he was talking about doing like a Zoom meeting so that people, there it is. There he is. There's the Senior Stoner right there.
I've seen the video that you're referring to.
Daily videos. He's a wife guy. He talks about his wife a lot. Nice guy. I think he deals with like chronic pain. And so he just smokes more weed than any of us can possibly think of.
Is that a challenge?
So yeah. Go ahead. If you could watch his videos and see if you think you could keep up with this guy, because I don't think I could.
Amazing.
But I'm a big fan of marijuana. I think it's a great drug. I think it's medicine. We need to legalize all weed and let everybody out of prison who's gone there for any drug. Any just release the prisons in general, not even talking about drugs. I'd say a vice I have is gambling. Luckily I haven't been to any casinos in a while just because of COVID and the pandemic, but I,
keeps you away, huh? Keep that money in your pocket, huh? That's how they get
you. Yeah. I guess I've like inherited from my dad, who started a yearly trip where we go to Vegas each year to bet on like the March Madness tournament and stuff, which
fun.
I understand it's probably pretty problematic, but whatever. Everybody enjoys March Madness, right?
We should the kids play hard. Athletes. They got heart, man. It's really easy to get
I
into.
We should pay the athletes so we could enjoy it a little more. But
good point. Yep. Glad you brought that up.
So, yeah, I do bet on sports, and I am into kind of like the daily fantasy sports grind. I guess that's one of the other hobbies I forgot to mention earlier. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
A lot of time just kind of watching sports and betting on it.
Yeah. All right. So next up is the question about sounds. This is one of these questions I'm thinking about getting rid of. Do you have a sound or a noise that you actually love or like a lot?
I like the Talking Heads. I like listening to the Talking Heads. I just took this question to be like, what kind of music do you want on in the background?
Sure. I'll give a shot.
Fela Kuti is always some great background music to have on.
That's some expensive shit though, right?
Yeah.
He's got a cool story. We should have you back on someday to talk about Fela Kuti. He's bass as fuck, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Really. Him and his his like compounds and
his harem of women, right?
Yeah.
Fairly what do they call him, like King of Africa or some shit like that? Like he's like the based motherfucker of the world, dude.
Totally.
Yeah.
I like Kraftwerk. I mean, I'm not much of a music guy, but I do kind of like songs that you can just vibe in the background.
Right. Do you have a sound?
Non-music sounds. What do other non-music sounds? I like the sound of sizzling, like cooking. It's a good sound. Kind of. What's that effect for when food gets browned? Chefs know it. Chefs will know if the word. Someone in the chat will probably come up with it. But the sound of that happening is always a good sound.
I bet you love chilies when those fajitas come out.
That's
how they get you.
It's a great sound.
Searing, a sear. Thank you, Jeep State Searing Operative.
That's not the word I'm looking for, though.
Oh,
actually, it's something effect. It's like a scientific term that is known as like the chemical reaction that causes food to react to fire that creates flavor and texture and stuff.
I'm going to look that up. I have so much to learn, Sam. I always have so much to learn.
If we figure out what it is and you Google search it, you'll get a lot of good pictures of like food that is like cooked exquisitely. There it is. Someone has it.
The Maillard reaction.
That's it. Thank you.
Some French-ass shit right there. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Which is a carcinogen, I think.
This is the beauty, Sam, of the hive mind of streaming live. Yeah. Yeah, chat's always there with an answer. I love it. Okay. Do you have a sound or noise that you hate or just don't like? I don't want you to get hung up on the word hate.
Let's do police sirens. Nobody likes that shit, right? Police sirens, I hate that.
Yeah, that'll do
always
shit,
a buzzkill.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sam, I don't remember if you mentioned where you grew up. If you grew up in France or Wisconsin, you get more than one answer. Otherwise, everyone else gets one answer to this question, unless you break the rules. I can't stop you if you break the rules. Sam, do you have a favorite cheese?
I grew up in Florida, so I guess I only have one answer. I'm actually lactose intolerant, but that doesn't stop me from eating cheese. Because sicko. I like a good stinky cheese. I'm a fan of... Like blue cheese and Roquefort cheese. Like I think that like the stinkier the cheese, the better. If you're gonna eat that shit, you know you want to taste it. So and plus, usually that sort of cheese you eat in smaller amounts, which is good for my lactose intolerance. We'll go with like a blue cheese. I like that on my salads too.
Nice. All right. So, Sam, then, if you were reincarnated as a plant or a non-human animal and somehow you had the ability to choose, what might it be?
Probably my dog, Laika.
His name's Laika?
Yep. Laika. She's got a really chill lifestyle. She gets lots of treats. She sleeps in the bed like a human. She's got a real chill life. I don't know what it's like being an animal. I don't know. So it's hard to tell, like, which animal really has the best life. But from my perspective as a human, it seems like this animal has a pretty good life. I think that there are other animals that are, like, really cool. Like, I think kangaroos are, like, cool. But I don't know if I'd want to be a kangaroo. I don't know what that life's like. It seems like it's pretty tough out there. There are a lot of, like, cool deep sea creatures, but not sure if I want to be living in the deep sea all the time. So I feel like that's a safe bet. My dog Laika.
Nice. I like that. Laika. Of course, great name. Dog went to space. All right, Sam. Now we're at the God question. If you went to heaven and you saw God there at the pearly gates and God's speaking to you, what would you like to hear God say to you?
Welcome. welcome. We're open-minded, considering that you weren't much of a faithful servant. In terms of, well, I guess I'm thinking of this more in terms of, I was raised Jewish. I was bar mitzvahed. But I, like, don't go to temple, really. But I would say I'm not an immoral person. So maybe I don't think I've done anything in my life that would deny me entry to some sort of eternal afterlife, unless it's for bullshit reasons, like you have to believe in this guy while you're alive the whole time to get in. And I think that that's, like, silly, right? that doesn't make any sense to me. So, assuming that there is some afterlife, then I would be surprised by that, but I guess pleasantly pleased. Pleasantly surprised is would be the word.
Yeah, right. Oh, look, I'm wrong.
Welcome. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in heaven. Yeah, it could be worse.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
I remember, okay, like my dad always saying, you know, it doesn't hurt to believe in God just in case.
Gosh, dude. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, a perfect wager. Yeah.
Seems like a pretty shitty dude if this guy demands you to believe in him to let you into the afterlife. It's like a cult of personality type thing.
Yeah. Pretty shallow. So Sam, now we get to ask about an influential leftist, and they could be dead or alive, that you would, you know, love to be able to have a chance to talk to and have a hypothetical conversation with and meet with.
So I went with Jay Posadas here.
Oh, whoa. All right. That's the first. Go on. Yep.
I mean, what's the point of this dinner, right? I want it just to be fun and, you know, get into some heady shit. And I feel like this would be the most heady stuff that I could get into with a prominent leftist. And I mentioned that I like gaming Kerbal Space Program. I'm a big nerd for space stuff. I'm a big nerd for, like, aliens and UFOs. And obviously Posadas' thought has a lot more to it than just that. But, I don't know. I think there's just, like, a lot of weird developments in science, and, you know, we're still living under this threat of nuclear war, and it seems like it's been renewed in recent years as well. And I think there's just, like, a lot of contemporary things floating around that it'd be interesting to get his perspective on. Yeah, mainly for the heady discussions, I guess. Like, I enjoy having cheap, like, late night conversations about aliens in the universe. And, like, even if like we're starting to stray away from the immortal science and materialism and, like, overthrowing existing capitalism in the US, I've like always sort of enjoyed the idea of, you know, if that we could probably learn a lot from fucking aliens, not just if they exist, but even if just pretending like they exist, in terms of like organizing societies in a way that could sustain a search for extraterrestrial life and expand the human civilization. Like, you, that requires massive cooperation and central planning, and would require dismantling capitalism and rethinking how we organize ourselves. And I think, yeah, I think it'd just be fun to have sort of those conversations. And there were a lot of interesting, like, turn of the 20th century Russian thinkers involved in cosmism that kind of gave birth to Russian space program, the Soviet Union space program, which, you know, was very involved in the struggle there. And like, those guys would probably be fascinating to have dinner with too. They believed in some whacked out shit. Like, we're talking people talking about space travel and living in space before we really understood what space was and what it would require to live in space. So they had just some wild ideas. So it'd be cool to like talk to these guys once they've been able to familiarize themselves with modern space travel and how it actually went down and where we are right now, and how it would recalibrate their ideas of humanity's future in the cosmos.
Love it. Unfortunately, he's dead. So,
yes, I think he died in the 80s. So are all these Russian cosmists who've been dead for like 100 years.
Yeah. I can't win them all. But Sam, the next question has to do about a favorite leftist book or author. Maybe you just named them. I don't know.
I mean, Marx was obviously influential, and reading Capital was influential in terms of just like giving me a basis in how I sort of view work and labor relations, and I mean, most everything. Like, it's just provided a nice basis. And of course, since like I read a lot of this stuff in college, I've like brought in other ideas to it and kind of modified my own beliefs. But yeah, it's had probably one of the most profound impacts on my growth. And, you know, The State and Revolution, also by Lenin, all the like contemporary stuff. Like, when I read like Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine at a younger age, like that was just kind of illuminating in terms of like, once again, taking theory and putting it into action in terms of like seeing how this stuff actually plays out, and also like learning ways, like contemporary examples to point to talk to people on how this stuff is happening. That stuff was like always useful. And I'm always like just going on fucking Marxist.org, like just to have that resource where you can, there's nothing really quite like it. So I'd encourage everybody to just like have fun on that for an afternoon, read all these guys that you see about on Twitter and hear people talking about, and go read their stuff.
Yeah, all right. Next up is, the question says streamer tips, Sam, but translate that anyway, like you, content creation, y'all do a very tight production on Means Morning News, but you also do a podcast. Translated that to just like content tips. I don't know. Yeah, I should change that.
No, it works. It works. As we already know, I barely know what streaming is, so I probably don't have advice for streaming. But just in terms of, I guess, presenting and getting ideas across and communicating, I think like one of the, I'm not able to write as much as I like want to write. I have to write, you know, basic outlines and you know, ideas I have when I'm doing the show. But like, I don't get to write articles and be it news articles or op-eds or any other like larger essays and projects like I used to. But one of the best pieces of advice that I got writing that also helps translate it when I'm doing the show is like, constantly think of someone in your head that you want to convince on this issue. Think of someone very specific, and it could be a family member, a friend, someone who's skeptical of your ideas, someone who's not skeptical of your ideas. I mean, it depends on what your, I guess, topic you're doing, and pretend like you're directly addressing them. Like, even if it means like writing their name at the top of the script or the top of the article you're writing, like, "Dear Joe, I wanted to talk to you about this," and then just do it. I found it to be helpful, one, in sort of organizing my own thoughts and approaching something. Because at the end of the day, like, we're all doing this to like convince people, or I mean, a lot of the people are already convinced, and those people are looking for information to help convince other people. You know, they're looking just for information. So we're here to, you know, help people along, and we all have our own ideology. I mean, I'm not hiding what I think my project is, and that's to advance anti-capitalist ideas and show through the news how capitalism is harming the planet and harming each one of us, and that there are better alternatives. And I think that in trying to make the case for that, thinking of someone personal to talk to is always helpful.
Sam, that's an excellent piece of advice. I really liked hearing that. That was, I haven't heard that quite yet. We've done about 70 interviews here. Really good, really good, unique piece of advice there, Sam. Love it.
Thanks. I actually got that piece of advice from the guy I mentioned earlier in the show, Tom Hartman, my old boss, I say boss, but he wasn't really that. Yeah. I mean, a good boss, to the extent that there can be one, yes.
Sure. All right. Oh, gosh, is that it? Sam, is that it? Oh, no. Oh, that's all my questions. So,
did we end early?
No, it's actually perfectly on time, to be quite honest. But what we do here is we can give you a moment. If you happen to have any questions for me that are burning, feel free to shoot those out. What I want to do as well is invite the audience to ask any questions for Sam while we have Sam with us for the next few minutes. And if I see any questions that look interesting, I'll pass those along to you. I think you have your eye on the chat. And if you see anything that you don't want to answer, just literally ignore it. It's just that easy. Okay. Yeah. Any burning questions for me, Sam? Otherwise, I don't see any questions in chat just yet.
Dan, you answered the one burning question I had, and that was, did I detect a Wisconsin accent? And what is the difference? Is there a difference between Chicago? How would you describe the difference? Because they're basically neighbors. I mean, whatever. There probably isn't a difference.
It's just probably kind of pretty close. I mean, the thing that you're going to get is like, you're going to hear this real Chicago accent from time to time, and it's going to pop out, especially if you watch the guy on YouTube, and he's got the show. It's called Crime Pays, but Botany Doesn't. He's got a really perfect like Chicago accent, sort of like South Chicago, almost Irish, but it also is really put on. So that's sort of like the cartoonish Chicago accent. Of course, you got the Bears, you know, that whole sketch with the dudes, the SNL guys in the 80s. But hard to say. I'm not really sure if I could put my thumb on the Wisconsin accent.
I've been to Chicago twice in my life. I'd love to go back because each time I went, I was like real quick. I was just kind of through passing. I went on like a road trip out of high school. Me and two buddies got in a van, committed to drive to Canada. And we went through Chicago, and shortly thereafter, the van broke down and we never made it to Canada. We made a detour to Kansas City, for a variety of reasons, and then like ran out of money and just had to drive home in the van. But yeah, Chicago seems like a good place.
Yeah. I'm starting to think actually the Wisconsin accent probably blends a little bit that with the Minnesota. Sorta, right?
I mean, they're all sort of the same, yeah. Right? They're all just like they're all differences of degree, not kind.
Beautiful. I'm having a question. Have you played the game Tonight We Riot?
I have. That's a game that Means TV helped put. Means TV helped put out. They've got like sort of a video gaming arm. I did play it. It's a fun game. Side scroller just like reminds me of playing some Nintendo games back in the day. Fun game. I think people can get it right now for free, or they could during Labor Day. It's discounted right now, hopefully. Maybe not.
Either I got way, it for free. Like,
You're supporting a video game creator union when you're purchasing the game. The guys who made it. It's a cool little outfit that's making video games.
Next question. What do you think about the Pentagon's recent posture regarding UFOs? What's their angle?
You have an opinion about this?
I'm curious what the questioner means by posture, I guess. Because by posture, they mean that they're like releasing weird shit that they don't have an explanation for. Because like they're not confirming or denying anything. They seem to still have the same sort of posture toward UFOs.
That weird UFO video that they put out from the Air Force, right? What the fuck was that, dude?
Yeah, I guess like a lot of this stuff. And I also, there is pressure being applied on the Pentagon by these sort of outside UFO agencies, like that Tom DeLong is involved in, you know, the guy from Blink 182. He's big into like UFO research now.
No.
Big time. And they've actually recruited people who used to work in the government on this stuff. And now these people have more freedom to like come public with the weird shit that they remember working on. So I think that's, and also these former pilots becoming public with things that they've seen while in the military. So it's kind of just like, I don't know, like, this is a weird thing. Like, there's all sorts of different reasons for whether the Pentagon knows if aliens exist or not, what their approach to that would be. I'm of several different minds on this. Obviously, I'm not like, I'm aware that most UFO sightings seem to correspond with like the Cold War and like experimental craft and stuff like that. But I also like, the universe is a massive place, and obviously there's intelligent life out there, and yes, I know it's a giant place, and perhaps like civilizations don't expand enough to get to the point where they can cross those large distances. Like, I'm aware of all these ideas, but I don't know where I am on that. I just like fucking talking about it all, I guess.
Well, folks, it's been an amazing time talking to Sam Sachs, who's a UFO conspiracy theorist.
UFOlogist.
Yep. All
right. Honestly, at the end of the day, that's what's on my tombstone. I'd fucking love that, to be honest.
Yes. Pretty based. Sam, I think that's a great spot to end things. I want to thank you for your time. We invited you in the spirit of building leftist unity, strength, and power. In that spirit, you were a wonderful guest. I really, truly hope we get to follow this up somewhere down the road, see what seeds we planted today and what's worth revisiting, and see what we want to plant and move forward. You know, I really enjoyed the chat, Sam, and I hope you did too.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Anytime. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and say peace and solidarity, and we'll hope to chat with you soon. All right. Okay, hold on. That's okay. Don't worry about this. All right, see you, Sam. It's just a stupid thing. That was Sam motherfucking Sachs. Motherfucker. Hey, listener. You just heard an episode of Leftist and Chill, the show you never knew you didn't need but still can't live without, the podcast version. Content like this is only made with the support of listeners like yourself. Please support at patreon.com/idansimpson today.